Legends often tell of spiritual journeys in which the hero must face great challenges before they gain treasure or a boon at their journey's end. We are each the heroes of our own stories. And as such, as we overcome obstacles in our path, we may gain wisdom, strength, self-awareness, serenity, or any number of treasures. Stories allow us to make sense out of otherwise puzzling or random events. Stories help us smooth out some of our decisions and challenges and create something that is meaningful and sensible out of the chaos of our lives. According to anthropologist Mary Catherine Bateson, we are all storytellers in an act of creating the composition of our lives. Researchers have found that our stories can also shape our future. In particular, telling stories of struggle that turn out well give people the hope they need to live productive lives. And stories that vividly describe the turmoil seem to help people grow wiser in the aftermath of major life changes. Narrative identity is an internalized story you create about yourself, your own personal myth. Like myths, our narrative identity contains heroes and villains that help us or hold us back, major events that determine the plot points, challenges overcome, suffering we have endured. And when we want people to understand us, we share our story or parts of it. When we want to know another person, we ask them to share part of their story. We make narrative choices, focusing on the most extraordinary events, good and bad, because those are the experiences we need to make sense of and the experiences that shape us. But our interpretations may differ drastically. I heard this example in a TED Talk. Say a parent taught their child to swim by throwing them into the water. One child may grow up and tell how that experience shaped their... may live to grow up. And tell how that experience shaped their sense of self as a hardy entrepreneur who takes risks. Another will tell how it is the reason they hate boats and authority figures and do not trust even their own parents. Still another may leave it out altogether as an unimportant part of their narrative. Ironically, I had an awful experience learning to swim. It never really became part of my narrative and identity until very recently. When I was 5, I was terrified to jump off the diving board. And I tried to run during swim lessons. I tried to hide. I was not going off that board. It was 4 feet tall. The instructor dragged me out from my hiding place under the diving board and had my mother drop me into the water. She was waiting, but had my mother drop me off the board into the water. I could swim enough already to reach the edge of the pool, in which I promptly threw up from all the emotional angst of that experience. And I didn't have to take swim lessons for a few more years. I eventually learned to love swimming, though not diving boards or heights. About 50 years later, I was in Mexico with my family facing a 12-foot jump into the water of a cenote. My family encouraged and coaxed, and I could not bring my feet to leave that platform. And then my son, Grant, after having already made the jump, climbed back up, and he's like, "Mom, we can do this. You know what I've already overcome." And in truth, he had overcome a fear of heights and needles and several other things. And his inspiration and his willingness to jump with me, I jumped. And to my surprise, it was fun. In fact, I proceeded to joyfully jump off several other ledges that day, and it turned out to be my favorite day of the entire trip. So now it's part of my narrative identity. Our stories change as our life experiences increase if we let them. People who tend to contribute to society and future generations are more likely to tell redemptive stories. Stories that transition from bad to good. The opposite is true as well. A contamination story is one in which people interpret their lives as going from good to worse, bad, without growth or positive change or the opportunity for something good to come of it. These stories tend to trigger more anxiety and depression. Now, redemptive versus contamination stories, or maybe empowering versus toxic stories, please know that I am not talking about a Pollyanna approach to life where every painful experience is great. I'm so glad I had that. No, that's not what I'm talking about at all. I don't embrace the idea that everything that doesn't kill us makes us stronger. Sometimes it just didn't kill us, and that's it. But these stories we tell ourselves, they might make us stronger. They significantly influence how we interpret those experiences and our role in them. People who believe their lives are meaningful tend to tell stories in which they are in control of the choices they make, or that they are loved, or that the obstacles they encounter are redeemed by good outcomes. The stories we tell about our experiences do indeed shape our recollection of that experience and the meaning we give them. In 2016, when I was beginning chemotherapy, a friend shared how horrible the experience had been for her, and that every time she went for an infusion, she felt like they were pouring poison or Drano into her veins. I felt that was a disturbing and frightening image. And while I had a great deal of compassion for her, I did not want that as my journey. Instead, I chose to imagine the amber-colored drip as golden Pac-Man gobbling up the cancer cells. And the white, clear infusion was a pack of white wolves coursing through my body, hunting down their prey. They were allies, not villains. And these were empowering images that ultimately, I believe, shaped a more positive story out of a very difficult time. Now, in the realm of narrative psychology, a person's life story is not a Wikipedia list of all the facts of their entire life, but rather the way a person integrates those facts internally to make meaning. This narrative becomes a form of identity in which the things we choose to include in the story and the way we tell it can both reflect and shape who we are. A life story doesn't just say what happened, it says what was important, what it means for the person who is, for who they'll become, and for what happens next. And people contain multitudes of stories, and by multitudes, I mean libraries. Someone might have an overarching narrative for their whole life, and different narratives for different realms of their life. Maybe career, one narrative, romance is another. Family, faith. They might have narratives within each realm that intersect, diverge, or even contradict each other. All of them filled with the micro stories of specific events. And to truly make a life story, they'll need to do what research calls autobiographical reasoning about the events. Identifying the lessons learned or the insights gained in life experiences, marking development or growth through sequences of scenes, and showing how specific life episodes illustrate enduring truths about the self. The most important thing to remember about narrative identity is that our stories are not written in stone. It's more like they are written in chalk. They can be rewritten by shifting the focus or the interpretation. And the way people recount these experiences to others seems to shape the way they end up remembering them. Just as there are consequences to telling, there are consequences to not telling. If someone is afraid of how people might react to their story and they keep it to themselves, they'll likely miss out on the enrichment that comes with a back and forth conversation. A listener may give you other things to think about or acknowledge that maybe that event you thought was so horrible really wasn't such a big deal. So you get a richer and more elaborated memory. If you don't share the story, your memory for that event may be less flexible and give you chance for growth. And this is where our interdependence enters. We need one another to understand our stories. We need to share and to listen and to be open to perspectives other than our own. In order to explain this power, I want to share a good bit about my spiritual journey. As a child, I was very interested in spirit. I felt and sensed a loving, even playful presence around and within that did not fit what my family believed. My father was a Lutheran minister, Missouri Synod Lutheran minister. I began challenging and arguing about God and faith at a very young age. I would question him, and he was brilliant, and as try as he might, his answers were never satisfying to me. By the age of 8, I was writing in my journal that I couldn't understand why people didn't realize we were all worshiping the same thing, just in different ways. How could there be just one right answer? The Missouri Synod Lutherans even believe that other Lutherans have it all wrong. Let alone Catholics, God forbid. Other faiths, no. But there was only one right answer, and that would not work for me. As time went on, I found it difficult to believe in anything with this conflict of what was expected. My father's religion taught that God gives you faith. I wanted it, but by my teen years, I had none. I wanted to believe, and I tried so hard. I tried fake it until you make it, with no success. And I became more and more resentful. If God gives faith, but didn't give it to me, there must be something very wrong with me. I developed a deep resentment toward God or spirit, and finally left for college believing there was no such thing. I explored Eastern philosophies for a few years, and then settled into atheism. But after about 10 years, I welcomed my first son into the world. That day, his first day holding him, a sense of wonder returned to me, and my heart broke wide open. In the musical Les Miserables, there is a line, "To love another person is to see the face of God." And I looked at that newborn baby and I saw divinity. I saw what to me was spirit. And I came to believe in that. I knew I could never believe in original sin. That children, I came to believe in that moment that we all enter this world with a spark of the divine. I finally felt that connection to something mysterious and deep, the connection that I had lost. And from that moment, instead of moving away from spirit, I found myself moving toward it again, searching, reading, exploring. And when I was around 40 years old, I found Unitarian Universalism in this beautiful congregation. A few years later, I ended up in seminary, still searching for answers. One day, I was having lunch with another student, a Christian woman I barely knew, and I was sharing my story and my resentment about religion and my bitterness that God hadn't given me faith. And I shared what I did believe, that there are many beautiful paths to peace, to the mountaintop, so to speak, that all gods, goddesses, and spirits are manifestations of the one spirit, the infinite source of life and love, the divine mystery. And she listened intently to my story. And then she said, "Jill, I think there's another way to look at your experience." Is it possible that God closed your heart to the message you heard in the church, specifically to drive you onto a different path? It sounds to me like instead of hearing one instrument, you hear the whole orchestra. And just like that, years of resentment melted away. The sense that I was the problem was gone. Her loving perspective helped me completely rewrite the story, even though the facts of my experience hadn't changed at all. My internalized interpretation of the events could never be the same. I have no idea what the Spirit actually is, and I no longer feel I need to know or would even be capable of understanding such a thing. But I do feel and believe that there is some energy or power, either beyond or within, that is accessible. And that brings me peace. It is a better story than the one that I carried for so long. But not a rewrite I could have managed without a compassionate ear and heart to listen and reflect back. What an amazing gift that was. So sharing our stories gives us the opportunity to be more flexible in how we interpret the events of our lives, in how we define who we are and how they shaped us. We are fortunate at Chalice to have a loving and compassionate community, opportunities for storytelling and for deep listening within our Chalice circles and our other small group ministries. I would ask you to reflect on the stories you tell yourselves. Is there an opportunity to rewrite part of your narrative? To write a better story using the same facts and events? Is there a way to make more meaning, to turn a contamination story into a redemptive one, to write a new ending and sleep better at night? May you lean into this community and find more hope and meaning in your stories. Blessed be.